recollecting death, and training in an awareness of impermanence. In this talk, I intend to explain the context and purpose of death reflection in skillful Buddhist practice. To assist in establishing the authenticity of this practice, there will be many quotes from the Buddha himself, as recorded in the Dhammapada and other suttas. Verses from the Terigata, the utterances of enlightened nuns, as well as an inspiring excerpt from a talk given by Venerable Ajahn Chah, which highlights the function of death reflection and the importance and benefits of cultivating an awareness of impermanence. I will also share some of my own experience and perspective with regards to this practice as well. Most students of Buddhism understand that an awareness of death and the contemplation of death play an important role in our practice. We understand that greed, hatred, and delusion exist in our minds because of ignorance as to the true nature of things. There is a very deep, latent habit in the mind of unenlightened beings, both to grasp at things as being permanent and to want things to be permanent. And because this habit is not in accordance with truth, it naturally generates a lot of suffering and frustration. Death reflection is a powerful remedy to this tendency. Our high-tech culture, with its constant focus on new and better, and our Western medical science, with its primary goal of extending life, leave us modern people quite unprepared to accept the simple matter-of-fact nature of death. Unfortunately, most of us have been deeply affected by the powerful biases that dominate our materialistic societies at present. And so as Buddhists, or as seekers of truth along the path to liberation, it is important that we deeply acknowledge the basic fundamental truths about the world and about our life, by contemplating these truths very deeply. Because as the Lord Buddha has explained, it is not by avoiding or denying the truth that one is liberated. One is liberated through experiencing deep, penetrative insight into ultimate truth. So how do we prepare the mind so that it may experience deep, penetrative insights? In Buddhist training, we understand that there are three main ways that we can develop wisdom. The first way is through listening attentively and sincerely to the teachings and wise words of other experienced practitioners. This includes reading and studying teachings as well. Through doing this, we begin to become familiar with and to appreciate wise teachings and wise concepts. The second way to develop wisdom is by repeatedly contemplating the teachings that we have heard or read about very deeply. Through doing this, we can develop a genuine confidence in these teachings, seeing that they truly are sound and wise and stand up to good reasoning. If we do this sincerely, over a long period of time, deluded ways of thinking will tend to drop away, and the power of wisdom will increase in the mind. The third way that we develop wisdom is by meditating directly and deeply upon the characteristics of life and the conditioned world. The impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not-self nature of all conditioned things. We simply train our minds to pay attention to the truth within the sharper, more focused awareness of meditation sessions. Focused meditation upon death is one very good way to bring our attention to bear upon the characteristics of conditions. But even simply meditating upon the impermanence of the natural breath, if practiced sincerely enough, can help us to develop insight. These simple lists are quite helpful pointers in practice, but life and practice, of course, are not as linear as such lists. In actuality, if we want good results, we need to be doing a lot of all of these activities to truly ripen the mind for insight. We study, contemplate, and meditate as much as possible, recognizing that all of these practices support one another and will deepen and ripen over time. Reading traditional Buddhist literature is one very good way to begin bringing our preconditioned assumptions a little more into balance. Both the subjects of dying and aging are frequently referred to with a consistent and uncompromising frankness throughout the Sutta Pitaka. The Dhammapada, a collection of pithy verses selected from the suttas, illustrates this abundantly. I will read some of these verses now. Verse 41. Ere long, alas, this body will lie upon the earth, unheeded and lifeless, like a useless log. Verse 128. Neither in the sky, nor in mid-ocean, nor by entering into mountain clefts, nowhere in the world is there a place where one will not be overcome by death. As we can see, there is no avoiding the facts here. Of course, these seem rather obvious statements when we think about them, but our problem is that we often don't think about them. As unenlightened beings, our habit is one of consistently forgetting. Correct meditation, at least in terms of correct Buddhist practice, involves frequent recollection and acknowledgement of the truth of impermanence. And because among all conditioned phenomena we identify most predominantly with our own bodies, acknowledging the impermanence of the body is an especially powerful way to challenge our latent assumptions and grasping. When we do this consistently enough, wisdom increases in the mind, while delusion is weakened and eventually uprooted. Another challenge that unenlightened beings are faced with is a tendency towards being lazy or somewhat heedless in the way we live our lives. Once again, death reflection can be a very helpful tool in that it is sobering and clarifying. It can wake us up from our dreams and fantasies, as well as our unskillful preoccupations, and remind us to focus on those things which are useful, skillful, and beneficial, especially spiritual practice. The Buddha, expert in imparting wisdom for every facet of life, highlights the value of awareness of death in the everyday world of human relationship. Dhammapada, verse 6. There are those who do not realize that one day we all must die. But those who do realize this settle their quarrels. And so we can see that death reflection can be a helpful reminder to resolve disputes, let go of old grudges, or to simply move on from the past with a humble attitude of forgiveness. For although we all aspire to the complete liberation of nirvana, learning to forgive and let go in these more ordinary ways reduces suffering and increases happiness right here and now. His Holiness the Dalai Lama frequently expresses the sentiment in his teachings as well that death reflection, rather than being depressing, is a useful tool in the context of living a more skillful life. In an introduction to one of the translations of the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, he writes, "Indeed, the reality of death has always been a major spur to virtuous and intelligent action in all Buddhist societies. It is not considered morbid to contemplate it, but rather liberating from fear and even beneficial to the health of the living." But as important as settling one's quarrels and living a virtuous and intelligent life is, on an even more profound level, as meditators, whoever undertakes the contemplation of death and impermanence diligently will have begun the essential task of liberating the mind from craving and delusion. Once again, there is no one more eloquent and direct in expressing this process than the Buddha himself. I will quote now from a sutta recorded in the Anguttara Nikaya. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Nardika in the brick hall. There he addressed the monks as follows. Mindfulness of death, O monks, if developed and cultivated, brings great fruit and benefit. It merges in the deathless, ends in the deathless. Therefore, monks, you should develop mindfulness of death. And from the Dhammapada, verse 277. All conditioned things are impermanent. When one sees this with wisdom, one turns away from suffering. This is the path to purification. When using the term the deathless, the Buddha is referring to the liberated state, the unconditioned, a state beyond birth and death, which has also been described as a state of unsurpassed, unshakable peace. As an inspiring testimony to this process of being purified through seeing the truth with wisdom, during the Buddha's lifetime, many bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, after attaining enlightenment, uttered spontaneous verses of exaltation. These verses have been collected in the Tera and Terigata. These newly enlightened monks and nuns exclaimed with great joy that they had gone beyond the realm of death and were now free from birth. Indeed, they had been purified and had turned away from suffering. I will offer some examples now from the Terigata. Verse 22. After her enlightenment, Bhikkhuni Jenti exclaimed, I have indeed seen that Blessed One. This is the last body. Journeying on from rebirth to rebirth has been completely annihilated. There is now no renewed existence. Bhikkhuni Mutta had previously been forced to marry a hunchback and cook for him and his family. After attaining enlightenment, he uttered the following words. Verse 11. O free indeed, O gloriously free, I am free from three crooked things, from the pestle and mortar, and my crooked back husband. And ah, I am free from rebirth and from death. All that dragged me back is hurled away. Wonderful indeed. Of course, we may not attain complete liberation quite so quickly as these bhikkhunis did in the time of the Buddha. But it is encouraging to be reminded that freedom from death and from suffering is the result of correct practice, and that contemplating death, far from being morbid, is an integral part of the path that will take us beyond the realm of death. And so, in understanding the potential benefits of this practice, how do we actually reflect, contemplate, and meditate upon death? There are many ways. One powerful method is to bring to mind within meditative focus some of the ways which our body could possibly meet with its death. In doing this type of meditation, we humbly acknowledge that death could come at any time, possibly even today. We accept this and open to it. Having done this, we sincerely acknowledge the various ways that death could happen. We can use our imagination to visualize some believable scenarios in which we actually die. It is good to settle the mind with some breath meditation first. Having done this, we set the intention to meditate upon death. The point is to stay focused upon this one stream of reflection, and as we visualize the actual death, we rest with this perception, acknowledging it deeply and allowing it to inform the mind. Many people find that by training focused contemplation in this way, the mind can become very peaceful and still. This is where our learning and contemplation can merge deeply in the mind as peace and insight. It can be difficult to truly understand how meditation works through any kind of description. And so perhaps the best way to learn about these types of meditation is simply to begin practicing them. It was with this intention that I produced this series of guided meditations. To assist meditators in learning how to integrate contemplation with meditation in a practical and effective way. I would like to talk more specifically now about the death reflections which I have presented on this CD. Essentially, what I have presented here is something of a death meditation workshop. I have tried to illustrate, through guided visualizations, a variety of ways in which you yourself might die. There are several examples of dying which demonstrate methods through which one can contemplate death, both the death of oneself and also the deaths of others. There is a meditation for contemplating the death of people who are or who have been important and close to us. There is an accidental death in the bathroom, a slow and mindful death in hospital from cancer, as well as the more traditional structured and analytical charnel ground corpse contemplation. In one of the meditations, there is even a violent death by shooting while walking back to the car after having been listening to a Dharma talk. This example will no doubt need some explaining. I am not trying to put anybody off going and listening to Dharma talks, but I felt that since such violent death is, unfortunately, one of the possible ways of dying for each of us, that there should be one example of such a death presented here. In this meditation, the victim dies without confusion or ill will, precisely because they had just been listening to a Dharma talk. I felt that if any of us had to die as a result of violence, we would choose for our minds to be in an otherwise auspicious state. These particular examples are intended to be relevant to many Buddhist lay people. There are also death scenarios involving the mindful deaths of monks and nuns. Rereading this list of deaths to myself, I am aware that it does sound rather gruesome. I wish to assure you that I have been careful to present each of these meditations with considerable thoughtfulness. They are presented slowly and calmly, and in the examples that I have given, the dying person always has an upright mind and dies with a clear, mindful awareness. We cannot be sure that we will die this way, but this would seem the best way to present this material. And it is hoped that by familiarizing ourselves through repeated contemplation, by meditating in precisely these ways, that when the inevitable event of our death actually comes, we will be much better prepared to sustain a clear and upright mind. Of course, some of you may not resonate with some of the examples and situations that I have presented here, but many of you probably will. If you find that the examples given in any of the meditations do not seem particularly relevant to you, I suggest that while doing the meditation, that you simply use your imagination and go along with the visualization. Do it as a creative exercise. Simply imagine being, or sympathize deeply with, the person going through the death experience. The point of the meditation here is to be aware of death. Once you understand the basic process of calming and collecting the mind, and then bringing to mind an example of a way that you really could die, you can then bring to mind your own relevant and pertinent examples in your own meditation practice. I am suggesting in these meditations that one maintains awareness of each in and out breath while doing the visualization, as a way of helping to establish and maintain a firm sense of present moment mindfulness. In each of the meditations, there are frequent reminders to be aware of each in and out breath. Sometimes using the recitation word Buddho, which can be translated as clearly knowing. At other times, using the word maranang, which simply means death. Used in conjunction, the message is knowing each in and out breath and knowing death. Or being aware of each in and out breath and aware of death. This balance of being aware of the breath while using an imaginative visual faculty of the mind may seem complicated at first. But with time, it should become easier. After all, in our daily life, we are often doing all sorts of complicated things and breathing at the same time. The breath is simply always there. But here, we are training our awareness to rest within the body, using the breath as an anchor while staying with a sustained contemplation. Rather than complicating things, checking in with the breath actually helps us to be with our contemplation mindfully. As the breath is in the center of our experience as conscious beings, holding it in awareness helps to keep us present and centered. Another benefit of training with mindfulness of the breathing is that should you find that the mind becomes quiet or deeply peaceful during any of the guided meditations, and I hope that it will, you can simply continue to stay mindfully aware of the peaceful breathing until the mind is ready to move from that peaceful state. My teachers have taught me that it is correct and skillful to allow the mind to rest and become one-pointed upon the breath after contemplating death in these ways. When the mind moves, as it quite naturally will, you can then return to the theme of contemplation. The energy and clarity that the mind gains through being peaceful can then be put to use in the cultivation of wisdom. With regards to listening to my instructions, you should try to hear my voice as if in the distance somewhat. Although you should try to listen to the instructions attentively, most of your awareness would ideally be with your own breath and your personal visualization. Simply hear the quiet, distant voice and follow the clear suggestions, hopefully becoming more and more circumspect and peaceful as your meditation progresses. Some people will be coming to the practice of contemplating death with quite a lot of previous experience, whereas for others, these methods and ideas might seem quite new. Some long-term practitioners may have already contemplated death in a variety of ways. If your Maranānusati practice is already well developed, or if you have cultivated different methods for some time, you might not find these kinds of visualizations very helpful. But try to listen with an open mind, and see if you can take away something which is useful, and integrate this into your current practice. For others, these meditations may be quite powerful and profound. It is the experience of many thousands of meditators that a sharpened awareness of death and impermanence can be very transformative. As there are many examples presented here, please take your time, go at a careful and mindful pace, and try to internalize as much of these skillful methods as you can, integrating them into your practice and your life. Ajahn Acharlo's guided meditations aside, if you do truly wish to develop the practice of being more aware of impermanence and death, it is essential that you remain committed to developing and maintaining your own reflective, contemplative faculty. After all, it is you who is most familiar with the texture of your own experience and life. You are the one who knows best your own personality and mind if you are truly paying attention. And so it is you who can make this practice most relevant to your life. I sincerely encourage you to learn, through consistent and long-term practice, how to make Maranānusati work for you. Try to notice the ways that you forget about or fall into denial about impermanence and death, and learn ways to keep remembering and waking up to the truth. As well as frequent meditation, another good method of contemplation is to simply acknowledge that all of those deaths that we see or hear about on TV or radio, or read about on the internet, could have happened to either ourselves or to any of our family members or friends. We simply make it a habit to take the blinkers of denial off and deeply and humbly acknowledge the ever-present possibility of dying whenever we hear about these things. Contemplate sincerely the various ways that you and your loved ones could easily die. Not so as to become paranoid and fearful of death, but to become genuinely mindful of the truth. And by doing so, becoming more thoughtful and considerate, more peaceful and careful, through living life with wisdom. I am confident that after some time, you will come to see the immense value of this practice. And naturally, you might then wish to share your practice and wise perspective with others. But having encouraged you along this vein, I would now like to offer one small word of caution. Don't expect everyone that you know to appreciate your death contemplations or your increasing awareness of impermanence. As was mentioned earlier, there is a lot of resistance and denial about contemplating these things present in most people's minds. This is one of several reasons why Buddhist monks and nuns would traditionally only teach once they had been invited to. Not everyone is ready to contemplate life in these ways. It is good to share your experience and insights with those who are sincerely interested, but a lot of the time, with regards to relating to our family and friends, it is sometimes best to simply be quiet. If people do not appreciate your wisdom, they may very well appreciate your peacefulness and calm. I will talk a little more now about what to aim for in the meditation practice. When you can reflect on death and impermanence skillfully, in a composed and meditative manner, you will find that the mind becomes significantly collected and peaceful. When we practice holding the perception of death and impermanence in the mind, in a focused and sustained meditative way, the result should be a very cool and deep quality of collected, spacious peacefulness. What we are striving for in our meditation is to become skilled at establishing, again and again, a clear and alert, deeply peaceful mind. A mind which pulls back and away from the world into a clear knowing of truth. Outside of our meditation, we can give ample thought to how exactly one should go about living a skillful life. But during our meditation, we are aiming for peacefulness and a strengthening of truth-discerning wisdom. If we practice diligently in this way, outside of the meditation times, the level of habitual delusion should decrease in the mind, and a deeper awareness of the true nature of things should begin to blossom. If you do not get these kinds of results straight away, never mind. But it is good to understand the potential of this practice. And of course, we all need to be both persevering and patient if we wish to experience such results. True patience, of course, is not like begrudgingly waiting for a late bus or a train. True patience comes from understanding that everything arises due to conditions, and that conditions cannot necessarily be forced. In meditation practice, we simply sow the necessary causes, and the results come in their own time. But if progress is slow, please do not give up. Feel confident that you definitely have an innate capacity to become deeply wise and peaceful. All beings do. Having met these precious teachings and methods, one should not settle for good results on an ordinary level alone. Please do not fall into the trap of using your meditation time to fantasize endlessly about how to live an impeccable life, how to manifest a perfect death, or how to arrange the most beautiful funeral, or whatever else. For one thing, things rarely go exactly the way we plan them, and even if they did, this would still not be ultimately satisfying. There is no end to this kind of mental activity. What we are trying to cultivate here is something much more dependable. Genuine awareness of death and impermanence begins to incline minds away from grasping at the conditioned world and away from unending future rebirths. Although most of us, even as long-term Buddhists, may still be subject to quite a few more births, one of my teachers, Ajahn Anand, a senior disciple of Ajahn Chah, teaches that reflecting in this way in this lifetime will definitely be reducing the number of births that we will have to undergo in the future. So although we may not see the deepest and most profound results of this practice right away, it is good to feel confident that when we contemplate these things correctly, the Dhamma is already beginning its liberating work. As sincere practicing Buddhists, we can be confident that we have the potential within our hearts and minds to pull away from the world and to undo the very causes for conditioned rebirth. We really can attain a liberated state, completely free from suffering. It is simply a matter of consistently sowing the causes. There is a living tradition of realized beings still present in our world today, illustrating this fact. I believe that I have been fortunate enough to meet several of these liberated beings. Not everyone has had such opportunities, and so feeling confident about the path and its fruits might not be so easy for some. But the written works of people like Ajahn Chah or His Holiness the Dalai Lama can give meditators a clear sense of the level of development of such beings. The integrity, sincerity, and profundity of wisdom simply shines through the words of such masters. Naturally, this kind of liberated state is the result of a gradual process of training. But it is important to be mindful of our truest aspirations, as well as mindfully intent upon the goal, however long it might take to come to fruition. This kind of profound spiritual focus gives our whole life a rich and ennobling context, and is part of what empowers Buddhist practitioners to maintain a solid foundation of faith, well-being, and joy, a sense of focus, a sense of purpose, and a confidence that all good efforts will bring excellent results, eventually. The Buddha and his enlightened disciples speak consistently and matter-of-factly about the existence of a deathless and unconditioned state, as well as the experience of the liberated mind. By means of encouragement, I will once again read several short verses from the Dhammapada which highlight this. Dhammapada verse 85 and 86. Few among beings are those who cross to the further shore. The rest of the bulk of beings only run up and down the hither bank. But those who act according to the perfectly taught Dhamma will cross the realm of death, so difficult to cross. Verse 238. Make an island of yourself. Strive hard and become wise. Rid of impurities and cleansed of stain. You shall not come again to birth and decay. And finally, verse 351. One who has reached the goal is fearless, free from craving, passionless, and has plucked out the thorns of existence. For such a one, this is the last body. Returning now to some of the more mundane challenges of our practice. Some people might have a fear that contemplating death a lot may make them morbid or depressed. If this does occur, then one is probably not practicing in a balanced way. In the course of practice, there may well arise a deep sense of disenchantment with the limitations and frustrations experienced in the conditioned world, or a type of sober sadness and dispassion. It is important to recognize that neither disenchantment or dispassion are depression. If you do experience these things, please do not make the mistake of judging these wise spiritual emotions as being negative and become discouraged. Because there is a type of wise sadness present in these emotions, a sobriety and clarity which can be helpful in fueling further skillful efforts. This kind of deep dispassion is actually signaling a growth in wisdom and correct seeing. The mind is waking up from its delusions and seeing the dangers of the world more truthfully. If we relate to such disenchantment skillfully, we will feel a deeper sense of urgency about Dharma practice. Then the more we practice, the deeper should be our feelings of peace and well-being. This deep peace and well-being may take some time to develop, but once this is established, meditators generally feel very fortunate to have met these profound teachings and methods of mind training. The important thing to remember is that dispassion and feelings of urgency are wholesome and should inspire a deepening of one's efforts. Depression, on the other hand, is unskillful. If depression becomes a problem, it is good to increase our efforts at being generous and kind, and good to spend more time generating loving kindness for ourselves and others. Think in terms of balance. But just to reassure you, my experience of association with nuns and monks, and also with lay people who cultivate death reflection a lot, is that these people actually become lighter and more joyous people. People with a bold, earthy, and infectious sense of humor. When we are genuinely aware of death, we don't want to hang on to any grudges or obsess about anything too much. We see each day as precious and valuable. We find a clearer focus in our lives. As we are now nearing the end of this talk, in the spirit of saving the best for last, I would like to quote from the venerable teacher Ajahn Chah, an impeccable monk who was famous for his light-hearted joy and profound, far-reaching wisdom. Ajahn Chah articulates beautifully here, with much more skill and direct insight than I can, the process of becoming wisely disenchanted, as well as the deepening of the inner refuge of true peace and wisdom, which arises through understanding the impermanent nature of things. This passage is an excerpt from the talk, Our Real Home, found in the collection of teachings, Food for the Heart. Out of due respect for the profundity and beauty of this teaching, the entire talk has been included on this CD on a separate track as a reading. So understand this point. All people, all creatures, are preparing to leave. When beings have lived an appropriate time, they must go on their way. Rich, poor, young and old must all experience this change. When you realize that that's the way the world is, you'll feel that it's a wearisome place. When you see that there's nothing real or substantial you can rely on, you'll feel weary and disenchanted. Being disenchanted doesn't mean that you are averse. The mind is clear. It sees that there's nothing to be done to remedy this state of affairs. It's just the way the world is. Knowing in this way, you can let go of attachment. Letting go with a mind that is neither happy nor sad, but at peace with conditions through seeing their changing nature with wisdom. Anicca vata sankhara, all conditions are impermanent. Impermanence is the Buddha. If we truly see an impermanent condition, we see that it's permanent, in the sense that its subjection to change is unchanging. This is the permanence that living beings possess, continual transformation from childhood through to old age, and that very impermanence, that propensity to change, is permanent and fixed. If you look at it like this, your heart will be at ease. When you consider things in this way, you'll see them as wearisome, and disenchantment will arise. Your delight in the world of sense pleasure will disappear. You'll see that if you have many possessions, you have to leave a lot behind. If you have few, you leave few behind. Wealth is just wealth. Long life is just long life. They're nothing special. What is important is that we should do what the Lord Buddha taught and build our own home, building it by the method that I've been explaining to you. Build your own home. Let go. Let go until the mind reaches the peace that is free from advancing, free from retreating, and free from stopping still. Pleasure is not your home. Pain is not your home. Pleasure and pain both decline and pass away. The Buddha saw that all conditions are impermanent, so he taught us to let go of our attachment to them. When we reach the end of our life, we'll have no choice anyway. So wouldn't it be better to put things down before then? I'm aware that this talk has gone on for some time. All of the major points which I had hoped to cover have been covered by now. I hope that something has been helpful. For those who are still interested, I will say a few more words about how I have tried to integrate death reflection into my life and practice. Whenever I am going on a journey, either in a car, a train, a bus, or a plane, for the very first 5 minutes after sitting down in the seat, I will always try to reflect that I may not make it to the planned destination. This is a good situation to use this reflection because the mind is usually in a state of becoming at this time. We are very rarely truly in the vehicle when we travel. We are usually thinking about the destination, the things we have to do when we get there, the people we have to see, those who we want to see, and those who we would rather not see, the things we have to say, the things we need to remember, why we're happy that we're going, or why we would really rather not be going, etc. In the car, I simply reflect that one of the wheels could explode and the car could veer into a tree at high speed. I remind myself that this could happen, and that if it happens, I have to be mindful enough to collect the mind very quickly. Similarly, no matter how good the driver is, an oncoming vehicle could smash into us, and there would be little that we could do. After meditating in this way for a while, I usually spread thoughts of loving kindness to the driver and the other passengers if there are any. And I do not tell them what I have been contemplating, remembering balance. Similarly, if it's a plane, I consider that we might not make it to the end of the runway. Or once in the air, I consider that something might occur which would result in a fast and unscheduled descent, culminating in death. And finally, having touched down on the runway at the end of the journey, the brakes could fail, a wheel could snap, the plane could spin, there could be a collision, etc. All of the various things which could occur that could result in injury or death. Throughout the journey, I try to spread thoughts of loving kindness to all of the other passengers and the staff. This is one of the ways that I try to challenge and confront the deluded becoming habit in the mind, and also a way that helps me to use the time that I have in the plane to practice meditation. Of course, most lay people probably get into a lot more vehicles than I usually do. As a forest monk, living in forest monasteries, sometimes a couple of months can go by without getting into any vehicles at all. During these periods, I reflect on death in different ways. But the times when I do travel tend to involve many different stops, visiting family, teaching, going on pilgrimage, or visiting branch monasteries. So at these busy times, bringing the mind back to the present can be very calming. Another practice that I have cultivated is remembering the dead bodies of others which I have actually seen. Sometimes there is a lot of resistance to death reflection in the mind. If we bring to mind the dead bodies which we have actually personally seen, the mind usually acquiesces and becomes more receptive to meditation. death suddenly becomes less abstract. It becomes something that we have witnessed for ourselves many times. After holding these images in the mind for some time and acknowledging the death of that person, I then try to deeply acknowledge that the body which I habitually consider to be mine will definitely come to a similar end. As a Buddhist monk who lived in Asia for a long time, I have probably seen more dead human bodies than most, because Buddhist monks are frequently invited to chant at funerals, and viewing the corpse is usually a part of the proceedings. We also occasionally attend autopsies, so as to deepen our understanding of the nature of the human body. But if you have witnessed a corpse at funerals, or at the site of an accident of some kind, you can make use of these memories to deepen your awareness of death. Lastly, I feel that I should acknowledge a fear that I know many people have. Could the activity of contemplating death frequently actually attract a premature death? It is true that what we think about a lot does have an effect upon what we are likely to attract and experience in our lives. But with a genuine Buddhist meditation practice such as this, I am confident that such fears are unwarranted. Remember that we are not sitting around being obsessed and paranoid about dying. We are calmly contemplating a truth, and hopefully becoming peaceful and wise. When considering the law of karma, you should understand that intention is the most important factor in all deliberate actions. While meditating upon death, we are intending to cultivate wisdom and peace, and we are intending to learn how to live more skillfully. There are many factors of the Noble Eightfold Path involved in this activity. Right view, right thought, right mindfulness, right concentration, etc. Buddhists believe that cultivating the Eightfold Path is actually the most auspicious activity that you can possibly do. It is even said that angels will offer protection to those who cultivate these practices sincerely. Personally, I feel that death reflection performed correctly actually decreases the likelihood of a premature death for several reasons. Firstly, we will have more mindfulness, and we will be more appreciative of our life, and thus we will be much more careful and less accident-prone. We will also become more skilled at abandoning negative mind states, which have a harmful effect upon health. And lastly, if done with a pure intention, I am confident that this kind of meditation practice produces a great deal of good karma. This merit, or positive potential, would most likely have both a protective and a life force enhancing effect upon our lives. In the course of my life as a monk so far, I have met several Buddhist monks who were well over 90, and I have even met one who is currently 114 years old. So perhaps we can feel confident that contemplating death does not attract untimely death. However, in keeping in line with the theme of our contemplation, we really don't know when our time will come. Whether you meditate or not, you could very well die today. And if you do, I hope that you have had time to meditate first. And so I offer these reflections for your contemplation, and I wish you every success in your progress along this path of practice. Be well.